The Walking Dead Talk Through, Episode 69, The King, the Widow, and Rick Review.
Welcome to The Walking Dead Talk Through, a fan podcast dedicated to The Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the characters, story developments, and theories of The Walking Dead. Send in your thoughts about each episode by calling 304-837-2278 or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here's your hosts, Brian and Ruthie.
Hey, survivors, and welcome to another fine episode of The Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Brian.
Hi, I'm Reese.
And I'm Steve.
And we are here to discuss The Walking Dead, Season 8, Episode 6, titled The King, the Widow, and Rick. And you may have already guessed, but we have two guest hosts yet again this week. Both members of the Facebook group. First of all, please welcome back Reese Nicole Brown.
Thank you, Brian. Happy to be back. I have a lot of thoughts on this season of The Walking Dead.
Okay, good. And no relation, but we also have Steve Brown.
Hello, everybody.
I swear that I didn't realize until like the next day that when I put you two together, that it's like, oh my God, they have the same last name.
We're married. You didn't know.
It's entirely uncommon. You don't meet anyone with that name. So
yeah, I bet. Well, you know, Reese, you've heard because she was a guest for the season premiere. So hi, Reese. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. Happy to be here. Always happy to talk about The Walking Dead.
Great. And your podcast is?
The Introverted Nerd Watches. Hasn't had a new episode in a couple of weeks, but I'm slowly editing, so it'll be out soon.
Cool. And Steve, why don't you tell a little bit about yourself?
Let's see. I'm Steve. I live in Oklahoma. I've been watching The Walking Dead pretty much almost since the beginning. Not quite. I think I binge watched the first season after it finished that year, and then had to wait for the second season to come out. But I love The Walking Dead. I've been listening to it, and this is the first time I've ever been on a podcast.
Well, great. And although you've never been on a podcast, I've heard you on call-in shows. Because we're both part of the Zedheads Unite, which is a Patreon group for Jason and Karen of the Walking Dead cast. And there's a monthly call-in show, and I talk to Steve on there quite a bit. And I know you listen to the two podcasts that I do, so cool, and thanks for being here. All right, so before we start on this week's episode, we did get some feedback from last week that came in just after we recorded. So I'm just going to give it here. And it's from Gary. So I'll just start. And he says, well, another episode where they could have taken care of Negan. But that's okay. They might make it interesting. However, they have Negan overcome. Maybe Daryl will have the honors of putting a captive Negan in his old cell and make him listen to Easy Street for about 5 days nonstop. He says, ha ha, and I agree. He says, very interesting. At the end, a helicopter, which we'll explain in a second, but that's been the topic of the discussion already tonight. And what looks like yet another group of people. It would seem the helicopter might likely be with that new group. What do you think? Well, I'll stop right there and say, I wouldn't be surprised if this is the Trash People's helicopter, because when we first meet them, there's that awful matte painting that we see Rick, you know, looking over the garbage dump and what looks like a helipad. I forget if it was on the left or right. Doesn't matter. But we see what looks like it might be like a helicopter pad far away. So it could be them, although that just boggles my mind. They can't speak, but they can fly a helicopter. Anyway, I think it could be them, or it could be the Saviors. It seems to be rather scary either way. And I have some thought about that when we actually start talking about the episode. Hopefully it will be a group that would prefer to side with Rick's group against Negan. He says, next episode should be very interesting. Well, sorry. I know that will be a topic for the discussion, but that's up for debate. Anyway, he says, awesome sauce was the helicopter. Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't this the first helicopter or aircraft of any kind in The Walking Dead, except for maybe first season? And to that, I say, no, it isn't, because we saw, when we first encountered the governor, those National Guard or whatever had a helicopter that crashed. But we haven't really seen one since then on this show. Fear, on the other hand, did have a helicopter in season 3 and the end of season 2. But, you know, we're not talking about that show right now. Hint, hint. So anyway, any thoughts or thing you want to say about Gary's feedback?
I think the helicopter is a new group. The Saviors didn't seem to know about the Trash People. So I think it would be really weird if, you know, the Trash People were flying around in their helicopter and the Saviors just, you know, didn't notice the single helicopter flying around that area and just sort of passed it by. So if the Junkyard People had a helicopter, the Saviors would have known about it.
Yeah,
so it has to be somebody new.
Yeah, I don't think it's the Saviors helicopter, because I think we would have at least heard about it or seen something to do with it before this, if it was the Saviors helicopter. So I think it's a new group.
And just to comment on what you said, Reese, the Trash People flying a helicopter? Yeah, that would be weird. as if we haven't seen weird when it comes to the Trash People. I will have some things to say about that group. But anyway, yeah, it's probably a new group, but I just don't know. I mean, it could be a hallucination too, or it could factor in the rest of the season. Anyway, I have some thoughts about that helicopter later. So let's start talking about the actual thing that we're supposed to talk about several hours later. I'll explain that in a second. We are here finally to discuss The Walking Dead Season 8, Episode 6, The King, the Widow, and Rick, which was written by Angela Kang and Corey Reed and directed by John Polson. So here is where we go into news, ratings, and info and errata.
There's a couple weird stories on the news.
All right. First of all, I'm going to just say this. Normally we do news last, and there is huge news this week about first the announcement about the crossover and then who the crossover character is and which direction that is. And I'll just say now, it's Morgan, and he's going to Fear, and we're not going to talk about it this episode. And I'll explain why. Prior to us recording this episode, Kyle came on and the four of us talked about the crossover in depth, and we are going to release that later this week as a separate episode in the feed. So if you're getting this on our normal feed, you will get that discussion. So just so you know, we're not avoiding it. We decided that we would release it as a separate episode. So other than that, we don't have news. Errata, though. All right. This is an error in judgment, I think. First of all, a couple of episodes, I gave a big F you to people that were no longer watching The Walking Dead. And I think if you're listening to us and you were offended by that because you're in that group, you're not watching The Walking Dead. First of all, thank you for continuing to listen to us. I honestly never even thought that we would have listeners that do that, but I didn't mean to offend anyone. It was simply, it was a little bit of frustration, I have to admit. You know, I mean, it's doing these guest host episodes is quite a bit more work because it's more to organize. So some of that was out of frustration. And, you know, Ruthie left and I was hoping she was going to be able to stick it out through at least the half season. So it was frustration. And so I apologize to any listeners that might have been offended. I apologize to Ruthie. I apologize to anyone that needs an apology. So I will keep that in mind. And believe me, if you're listening to us, I'm very happy whether you listen or you watch The Walking Dead or you don't. Love to hear from those of you that fit into that group because I'd like to kind of understand why you want to keep listening to us. But I'm flattered by that, and hopefully you'll keep listening to us. So anyway, enough of that. As far as this episode, there was one major thing. If you may have noticed a resemblance with Henry from The Kingdom, the kid that we see Carol interacting with, Henry kind of resembles Sophia a little bit. If you see like a season one or season two picture of Sophia, you'll see there's a resemblance, and that's because Maxon Lintz is the brother, younger brother, obviously, of Madison Lintz, who played Sophia. So
very nice.
I thought that was cool. The director, he's first time director of The Walking Dead, and he's got pretty long list of credits. Looks like the last few years he's been an executive producer of Elementary, but I don't know whether or not he did a great job, I guess, is to debate. As far as ratings, because of the Thanksgiving Day holiday, this always happens during holiday weekends, the ratings are delayed. So we don't have ratings for The King, The Widow, and Rick, but we do have ratings for last week, which we didn't have when we recorded, which was Season 8, Episode 5, The Big Scary You. And I think scary is probably the big keyword there. Scary indeed, because ratings were down quite a bit, actually. The Walking Dead got a 3.42 in the 18 to 49, with not only is it at the under 9 million, now it's under 8 million. So it got a 7.845 million viewers. And that compares to the previous week, which was up actually from the previous week, 3.87 in the 18 to 49 with 8.688 million viewers. So approximately 800,000, less viewers and, several points of, ratings down. So not good. Any thoughts about that?
I was thinking about it this week, and I think after last season, I think a lot of people are waiting to binge it, or they binge like three episodes at a time instead of watching it immediately when it comes out or within the first couple of days. I know I would do that if I wasn't regularly listening to podcasts and watching stuff. I would probably let it pile up and then watch two or three of them at one time.
Yeah. And, you know, it is, you know, getting near the holidays, but like looking at what was playing that Sunday night, I mean, I think there was a big football game on. The American Music Awards was on, but it didn't get great ratings either. So I don't think The Walking Dead was affected too much by that. It could have been the football game, or I don't know, because I thought the previous episode was pretty good. And usually after you have a pretty good episode, the ratings are a little higher the following week. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I was really surprised.
I'm not. I know just from what I've been seeing, Negan isn't really translating for a lot of people. So if you're not into Negan and then you see that the next episode is going to be very Negan heavy, you might want to check out.
Yeah, you might want to, you know, watch it in the time delay. So
yeah,
on demand or something. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point, Reese. And Talking Dead didn't do any better. It got a 1.09 in the 18 to 49 with 2.620 million viewers. And that's still better than what Fear was doing at the end of the season, because it was sub 1. But that compares to the previous week's 1.28 and 3.118 million viewers, which was about even from the previous week. So all right. So, and other than the crossover, which you'll hear separately, we don't have any other news. So let's finally get into the ratings for this episode. Reese, what did you think of The King, The Widow, and Rick?
I didn't think very much of it. I'm giving it 5 out of 10. Why are the junkyard people here in my life still?
Wow, that's pretty low.
I enjoyed it. I give it 8 out of 10 crushed water bottles.
When I first watched it, I enjoyed it a lot more than I did on subsequent viewings. And, you know, sometimes this happens when you, I've listened to a few other podcasts. And, you know, sometimes I'll absorb some of the things that they say. And, you know, reading other feedback and whatnot, it can affect me. But I think just some of the things about the episode really kind of magnified in subsequent viewings. So originally it was going to be a 9, but it is down to a 7.5.
Wow.
Orange, rubber aprons, and nothing else.
What?
Indeed.
Are you kidding me?
And my alternate one will be 7.5 hippy dippy kung fu fighting friends.
I almost used the hippy dippy kung fu fighting friend.
I couldn't believe when he said that. One of the podcasts that I listened to, some of Two Dead Chicks and Kia on there mentioned that this week's episode was kind of had a jinx to it, because for some reason, episode 6 of The Walking Dead, doesn't matter what season it is, sucks. Or it has some major issue to it. And I was going back. Okay. So season 1 was TS-19, which I thought was a pretty decent episode, but I know some people thought the explosion of the CDC was bad. And I know Kirkman hates that episode. Season 2, episode 6 was probably my least favorite episode of The Walking Dead for a long time, which was Secrets, because I thought that was extreme filler and they did not need to do that episode at all. They could have literally gone and shown Sophia in the barn by that time. It was just a bunch of stupid stuff. Season 3, episode 6, actually was a pretty decent one. I believe that was Hounded. Season 4, episode 6, definitely fits into this. That was the first Governor Return episode.
Oh, no.
So that was called Live Bait, and that was my least favorite episode of Walking Dead. and then season 5, episode 6 was actually pretty good, but that was, that had the stupid, van off the bridge.
Oh, I hate that episode.
Yeah. And then season 6, episode 6 was the introduction to Dwight, which I did not care for that episode too much. I found it was very stunted, and that writer never wrote an episode again of The Walking Dead because
good.
Yeah. Season 7, episode 6 was the Oceanside episode. So, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I rest my case. So, yeah, it definitely seems to be a pattern there. And Kia, thank you. I'm sure she won't listen to us, but I will give her full credit for bringing this up. And as soon as I heard that, I had to agree. We have some other listener ratings. So, Reese, why don't you start it off?
Okay, PB and Zane says she rates it 8.5 Naked Ricks.
Cheryl Rainey Fox rates it 7.9 Rocket Launchers.
Claire, who was one of our guest hosts last week. Hi, Claire. Lang Redderer, she gives the episode 7 Microwave Mailboxes. That's a good point.
And Laura says 7.75 out of 10 bargaining chips.
And finally, Faith McQuinn gives it 8 crashed speakers.
All right. And now it is time for Awesome Sauce.
Awesome Sauce!
All right. I will start it off. Cheryl Rainey Fox, her Awesome Sauce is that I did enjoy Gregory getting thrown in the pen with the saviors. He so totally deserved that. Yes, he did. And that was going to be an awesome sauce of mine because she learned from Gregory's own words that you can't trust them. So obviously she can't trust Gregory, and I don't think she should trust Gregory. So he deserves to be in there too.
Okay. Claire Lang Redderer says, which I agree with, her awesome sauce was seeing Carl and Michonne, who I sorely missed. I did really miss them. They were in the first episode, and they're just back for, unfortunately for this episode, but they're back, so that's good.
PB and Zane says, awesome sauce was when Rosita blew that guy sky high.
Was it sky high or just vaporized him?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was vaporized, all right. And I know some people, even one person that Steve and I know, said that this was the worst special effect that the show has ever done, including the deer. And I'm like,
no
way. I'm sorry.
No.
I thought it was cool. I don't think it was actually realistic, because if he got hit by an RPG at point blank range, he probably would have turned into, like he had been through a food processor.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to see.
Yeah.
I like this kill as well. And I actually, the first time it happened, I actually just said, wow, in my apartment when I watched it. So
yeah, my reaction was best kill ever. And after watching it a few other times, I thought, okay, maybe not the best kill ever, but it was still cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe the special effects weren't completely realistic, but I just loved it. And I will say that when you download this episode or see it on the website, that is our image for this week.
Nice.
Yeah. Not him exploding, but, Rosita, shooting the RPG. So. I already made it up this week. Usually that's one of the last things we do, but I did that one. Laura is next, and she has a nice long one. Actually, she has several. Maggie Green, she says, thank you for using logic to realize that you didn't have to kill all the prisoners. Just Jarrett, please. Yeah, totally agree with that. He's got it coming. But that they could also be useful as leverage. Finally, a leader thinking with her brain. Yeah, that's a snub at you, Rick. Blows a whole truckload of munitions while roughhousing with his bro, Grimes. Plus, she had the wherewithal to stick slimy Gregory in with the other malcontents and gave Jared a well-deserved cold cock right in his smarmy rat face. In fact, a nice side of awesome sauce to all of our ladies who have been MIA, Michonne, Rosita, and Tara. Well done, ladies.
Faith McQuinn says, I may enjoy the hell out of fight scenes on this show, but Maggie standing at the window with Gracie and saying she will either use or kill those saviors was the ultimate badassery. That's my awesome sauce.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I thought that she was definitely thinking. And I also liked that, you know, she kind of put Jesus aside and said, you know, that he shouldn't have done what he did. And I agree.
Yeah, I really liked it. I rewatched that today, and I really like that scene, how she makes it a point to pull him aside, not publicly. Like, she definitely degrades Gregory in front of everybody, but when she disagrees with Jesus, she kind of pulls him aside, one-on-one things. I really liked that.
I did too. Steve, what's your first awesome sauce?
All right. I know a lot of people disagree with this, but I'm sorry. I met her in Tulsa, and Pollyanna McIntosh in Just a Smock. That's definitely my number one.
I'm glad somebody enjoyed that.
I really liked the return of the three questions. We haven't heard them in a long time, and I know I've heard some people talk about how we've missed those three questions. And so hearing Carl use them was really good. And then the cold open really reminded me of just – I've been deployed and away from home. And when you send letters back to home and you tell them what's going on, not necessarily like Rick's – those letters they were – using, but just having those that physical connection with other people in that written form. So I really like that cold open with the different letters being distributed among the different communities.
It reminded me of something that I have within my own family on my mom's side. I'm an only child, but my mom, actually, both my mom and dad come from big families. My mom especially was the oldest of 14. And, well, you know, French-Canadian. And unlike me, she was a real French-Canadian. she spoke French. They have, and they still do this to this day, they call it the family letter. And it basically, a member from every of the 14, you know, families, except for this family, because I was too late at returning it one day, and I kind of got I got
they
voted
out of the family.
Yeah, I got kicked out of the family letter. Anyway, I was moving. I mean, what do you want, man? I just moved into a house. but anyway, they still have this family letter to this day, and I think it's gone on at least 40 years, probably quite a bit longer. So it reminded me of that, but I also kind of wondered, how did they do that?
Yeah, that was my problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Reese, what about you? What'd you have for awesome sauce?
I didn't really have awesome sauce. Carl and Michonne were back. That's why I gave this episode a 5.
Uh-oh. There were a couple things that I agreed from what the listener said. I have been very vocal about my dislike of the trash people. That's kind of an understatement. But I am going to count my blessings this week. And because when we had the first real episode of the trash people, there was like a shot elevated, whatever they call that, you know, like aerial shot. And we saw all the trash people, and I counted them back then. And there were 100. Well, today I did the same thing on a similar shot and I counted 62. That means that during the season finale, Rick and, you know, the kingdom and the hilltop managed to kill 38 trash people. So I have to give my awesome sauce to the fact that although they're still around, 38 trash people are dead.
That's pretty obsessive.
I don't like the trash people. All right. That is it for awesome sauce, except for we have a voicemail and it was done in two parts, which is kind of unusual. But the way that it was done, the awesome sauce and weak sauce were done as a separate recording. So Tilly, first of all, thank you for doing that. That was very thoughtful of you. So we're going to do your awesome sauce and weak sauce recording first.
Hi, I'm leaving feedback for episode 6, season 8, The King, the Widow, and Rick. This is Tilly calling from Toronto. My awesome sauce for this episode is the whole sequence with Michonne and Rosita. I loved the entire thing. I loved watching them sneak into the warehouse that was not being guarded at all, which was hilarious. I loved watching Rosita search for a grenade gently and not finding any. I thought that was very funny. I loved watching Michonne in a fight, even though she's still recovering from her last fight and she was still holding her own. I loved that saber that she was fighting with. She was hilarious. I'm kind of sad she got killed, but that's okay. I loved watching Rosita blow up that guy with the rocket launcher. That was the most epic human kill I've seen in quite a while on this show. Love that. I love the part where it was like, damn it, they got away. And then all of a sudden, oh no, here comes a dump truck with Daryl taking them out and just shooting that savior in the head. I thought that was the best. And my weak sauce for this episode is yet another kid following Carol around. I mean, I'm pretty sure we've seen this before, and I'm also pretty sure that this is basically just a ticking time bomb for this kid to die, which is unfortunate. So, yeah, I don't know why they have to do that again. That was kind of weak. So, yeah, that's my awesome sauce and weak sauce.
Cool. So, actually, she brought up a couple of things that we hadn't discussed, so. All right, well, here is it for the rest of the week, Sauce.
You're worthless and weak!
All right, Reese, why don't you do the first one?
PB and Zane says, I have no weak sauce at all. Wait, I do. The garbage people. Ew. Give that lady a standing ovation, because true.
Claire Lang Redderer says, lame sauce was seeing too much of everyone else, including the annoying trash people. Additional lame sauce. Did anyone notice how bad the editing was in this episode? They jumped right from scene to scene without any buffer at all, probably because they were trying to cram too much into one episode.
Such terrible editing this episode.
Yeah, and I didn't write down who edited it. I believe it was a person I've never seen before. As I think the director of photography was a name I didn't recognize either. And I will give a weak sauce of mine based on this because it's related. The title was very deceptive because it was called The King, the Widow, and Rick, and it had very little of the king, very little of Rick, you know, because after we see them take Rick, we only see him, you know, in the last couple of seconds, and we only see naked Rick and an eyeball. So, yeah, and we did see some of Maggie in this episode, but I mean, it was mostly about everybody else. So why did they give the name of this episode The King, the Widow, and Rick? It's not appropriate.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I actually had the title as one of my awesome sauces, and then after I watched it a couple times, I was like, no, it doesn't really work unless they're just trying to describe the three different communities. And that's what that creepy savior guy that had Ezekiel in that episode, the guy with the glasses.
Oh, Gunther?
He called them that. He said, we can't kill the king, the widow, or Rick. Something like that, yeah. Is what he said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Cheryl Rainey Fox, she says, going by the alternate title of Lame Sauce, there are several. Rick going to try and make a new deal with the trash heapsters. The savior, Jared, isn't dead yet, and we saw Norwalkers while the saviors were held captive outside the walls of the hilltop. I had some trouble believing that Daryl just happened to be at the right place and wreck that truck with the speakers, even though I shouted yes. To agree with you there, not only did I not agree with him trying to set a new deal, but unless
it's a trap
by Rick, I see no reason why he would go there alone. It just seems, seems so flawed.
Yeah, and I saw that feedback and I thought some more about it. And again, when I rewatched it today, at the moment when Jada says no to him, he gets this look on his face almost like that's what he expected to hear. And so I think there's something further down the road about this, that this is somehow a setup for something. And that's, I'm going to kind of insert my weak sauce here because it goes along with what Cheryl said. This Deus Ex Machina stuff we've seen in these episodes where just somebody all of a sudden has the answer, or like Daryl just showing up at the last second with that garbage truck at right the last minute. I'm starting to get a little tired of those plot devices.
I have to agree with you. I did think that it was just contrived. Really didn't need to go down that way. I mean, we could have seen, like, we didn't even know that they were traveling in a garbage truck.
Right.
So it didn't need to be Deus Ex Machina. It could have been, you know, it could have been telegraphed just a little bit. Why was he there? I mean, was he just going there because he heard the music too? Maybe. I don't know. But I have to agree.
Yeah, it would have made more sense to have Rosita have another rocket and have her walk out of the warehouse as that truck is traveling away and just fire another rocket at it and destroy it that way.
Yeah, the funny thing is that we heard walkers around the hilltop, but they never came out. So I didn't understand that either. Cause I definitely at one point, I think Jesus was out there. We heard walkers out there, but they never showed up. So I have to agree with you on this one, as well, Cheryl. So, all right, next.
Lara's lame sauce is none other than the trash holes. Who does metal sculpture in the nude? I seriously think the showrunners threw that in just to rub our noses in the fact that these losers were back. And yes, I do know how bad that sounds. Oh, that's great. I agree.
And we have related weak sauce here.
Faith McQuinn says, I'm jumping on the hate train for the Trash Heap Clan. What was up with the nakedness? How have all of them avoided tetanus all this time? Do they bathe? Because they obviously wash their hair. How can that woman hold so much friggin' power over those people? Are they high off the trash fumes? Okay, rant over. Sorry.
Your rant is over, but my rant is just beginning. Okay, so I have been very vocal about my dislike of the trash people, but it's getting to hatred now. Just when I thought they couldn't get any weirder than they already were, and Steve, I know you liked it, but I think that had to do more with the actress, and you know, because I've said it before, she cleans up nice.
Yes,
she does not look like Jadis in real life. She's a beautiful woman. I don't want to see naked Jadis. I'm sorry. I don't want to see her in a apron. And it wasn't just her. It was that other dude. What the hell were they doing?
I didn't notice the guy until like the second or third rewatch, to be honest.
Well, we got like a bunch of side ass with him. So, I mean, I couldn't help but notice him. It's just like, what are they doing and why? And you know, they're working with metal, and to me, that's not a good idea. So I don't know, I don't get these people. I don't get them. I just they're so weird, but it's weird in a distracting way. It's not weird in a, you know, cute way. It's just there's like an automatic penalty now whenever they show up, because they're so annoying and they're so weird that they don't fit into the show. And I said it before and I will say it again. If there is a time jump 20 years in the future and we encounter the trash people, they'll fit quite nicely a generation into the apocalypse. But 2 or 3 years in the apocalypse, no. I'm sorry, unless they have been, you know, dining on fumes, or, you know, breathing the air of landfill and noxious chemicals, there is no reason why they speak in the way that they do. Their behavior is okay. I don't have any major issue with their behavior, but it's their speech. And okay. The naked apron thing adds to it.
Yeah, I'm on board with not liking them at all. So I'm good with that. I like Pollyanna McIntosh, but I'm probably bringing that up way too much.
Well, okay. Did you at least get a photo with her?
Yes. Oh, yes, I do. I have a photo. You did a selfie. She is wonderful to talk to. She was in a show also that I like called Happen Leonard. She was in the first season of that.
Oh, yeah. And I've heard of that.
That's another show where they don't make her look anywhere like what she is. She was made up with very strong like makeup, and her hair was straight up in the air and stuff, but you can still see the beauty there. And she's wonderful to talk to. And she was right next to, Stephen Ogg and, Austin Aurelio in Tulsa. And she had wonderful things to say about both of them as well. Cause I took it that they had done some cons together, and not, cause I don't think they've ever been in an actual, scene together. But they had done, I'm sure I got the impression they did cons together and stuff. So
I guess I'll give my first weak sauce because, and I guess I can't give it to the trash people because I've already covered that. The first thing that I have, Jared the Weasel. I love the portrayal. I think, Josh, Michael, is, playing the character quite well, but he's so one dimensional. Like he's twirling mustache Jesus at this point. You know, he's so over the top. I once called him Baby Negan, but I don't even think he's Baby Negan anymore. After seeing the insight of Negan, he's just bad, and he's going to get himself killed. And
not soon enough.
Yeah. Not soon enough.
That's what doesn't make sense to me. And they even mentioned it on Talking Dead, that whoever finally kills this guy, the audience is going to cheer. And I don't understand why Maggie didn't just make an example of him right then. Like, I understand you want to use him as bargaining chips, but that would have been an ideal situation when he struck out, or he tried to grab that gun, to just shoot him and be done with it and show everybody there, this is what's going to happen if you cross us.
Reese, what's your first weak sauce?
Just all of the terrible decisions that everybody made in this episode. You know, Rick going to see the garbage people for, you know, some people say he has some ulterior motive and he has some further down the line plan, but I don't understand why he's not just treating them the way he's treating the saviors. You know, why weren't the trash people just on the list of satellite stations that he had to attack? And Michonne, Carl, and Rosita, you know, happy to have them back, but why did they leave Alexandria? All three of them. Oh my God. Oh, and Tara and Daryl. Just, I don't understand. I really don't understand the decisions made in this episode. They make zero sense to me. you know, I don't know. I didn't like it.
Well, I can't agree with you more. It seems like the only two characters I can think of right now that are actually continuing to follow the plan are Rick, even though it seems like a crazy plan at this point, Rick and Carol. Everyone else is totally off the script.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like completely, completely off the script. I guess, you know, Maggie is also pretty much following the script, but in her case, she's off the script too, but not of any fault of her own. You know, she's dealing with the decisions of Jesus, who had to bring in, you know, the POWs because, you know, Jesus likes to save people. And who can blame Jesus? Because he's Jesus.
No, Maggie called him Paul in this episode, so he lost his name. Paul is.
Was it Maggie?
I think it was Maggie. Was it Maggie?
I think it was Gregory.
They called him Paul.
Okay, yeah. So Gregory took away his name.
Yeah, and Paul now. You notice how that one savior Alden definitely took note of the fact that he was being called Jesus. Yeah, so yeah, I agree with your weak sauce, definitely, Reese. Steve, well, you already gave that one. Do you have any other weak sauce?
Really, it's just I don't usually like these setup episodes, and that's really what this episode feels like to me. Is it was setting up for everything that's going to be happening down the line. And the other weak sauce I did think of as we were talking about it that I don't think I see anyone mention is, are we going to see Maggie pregnant at any point? Is she actually still pregnant?
It's only been 2 days since the end of season 7. So,
well, you know what?
We're only on the second day of this season.
Really. That's right. That's right. Michonne says it's a day and a half. Right. Yeah. It's been a day and a half.
Okay. So that's my other weak sauce. A day and a half. Now think about this. So when we see Rick, you know, and the rest of them go to the sanctuary, it's daytime, and then it's a day and a half, and it's still daytime. Okay, so like, and one looked like morning, and the other one looked like morning too.
The hilltop is in another time zone because they experience night, or they experience like darkness, I guess. I don't know what how time moves on this show.
It was I think Rosita and Michonne that said it was a day and a half.
Yeah.
But that's my point. Unless it was like, you know, the middle of summer and it was, you know, maybe 8:30 at night or something like that, and it's still light, then okay, a day and a half, I'll buy it. But that was you know, minor weak sauce, but still, they could have just said 2 days, not a day and a half. I would have expected dark one of the two times. Anyway, all right, let's move on to our feedback.
We can talk about it.
We're done talking. Time to listen.
All right, so our first bit of feedback, and I already mentioned it, we got a voicemail from Tilly. She also gives a rating here.
Hi, this is Tilly from Toronto again. I wanted to leave my rating for this episode, which is 9 out of 10 red aprons. That was insane how we watched the heapsters in their tiny little red aprons and no clothes on. I'm not sure what that's all about. Definitely a weird bunch of people. Overall, I love this episode. I liked that it gave a lot of sort of placement story, telling us where, you know, putting the characters in a new place so that we can go forward with the story, hopefully in the next episode, because not too much happened. And we're still kind of seeing all the bits and pieces of the characters sort of running their own operations instead of following whatever plan it is they put together. So I'm not sure how they're going to tie it all together, but it's interesting anyway. So I did like this episode. And I'm also very excited about the crossover news with Lenny James. Not sure exactly how they're going to fit it in. I think that's probably confusing to a lot of people. Because there's only so many, you know, there are some time chunks where we don't know what he was doing, but, you know, that story was kind of told to us. So I don't know if it's going to be filling in the holes in the time that he spent or a time jump for Fear the Walking Dead. But either way, I'm very excited because I love Lainey James and I love Morgan. Love that character. It's all.
And her voicemail cut off there right at the end. But thanks so much, Tilly, for your voicemails. So obviously she liked it more than all of us did. And I will say that when I first watched it, first time it was a 9, and it only got worse from there.
This is from Cheryl Rainey Fox, and she says, "So for once, I did not totally enjoy this episode. Most of it was good, but some was just illogical. I love the king. Ezekiel is sorrowful for what is lost and that he thought all would be well, but he is the one they look up to, so he needs to get over himself. I agree. Carol needs to figure out a motivator. I did find it funny that Henry followed her around as Sam did. I say that Carol just needs to bake some cookies for him too. I must say it was interesting to see Rick naked as a Jaybird in that metal storage. Does anyone know he is there from the group?" And I think he said that when he talked to Jadis, he said, "My people know that I'm here." So in answer to that question.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I agree. So much of what you said there, Cheryl. All right. Next is Claire. She says, much like, Reese and me, this was my least favorite episode of the season. And I'm bummed because I was so excited for it. It should have been called The King, The Widow, Rick, Daryl, Michonne, Carl, Maggie, Gregory, Ezekiel, Carol, Aaron, Tara, and Rosita. I don't like when they do one episode focused on one character, but this was no better. It had everything but the kitchen sink, and I was irritated that they had so much going on at once. I feel like lately they have been getting sloppy with editing, sound effects, and music. A lot of what makes Walking Dead great is in the details, and I feel like I'm seeing the cartoon deer all over again. Why? I generally have way more positive feedback for the show than negative, but because I love it so much and it's well done. I've liked this season, but this episode was disappointing. Take care and God bless Brian and whoever else is lucky enough to co-host with you this week. Well, I have to say. And I will just say again, thank you, Claire, for your emergency guest hosting last week. And considering, you know, she only had 2.5 hours to prepare, I thought she did an incredible job.
She did. Claire, she did great.
Yeah.
The MVP.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, thank you, Claire, so much. And I got to agree. In fact, my weak sauce was very similar about the title. You know, it just was, I don't know, it wasn't good. And I think what did I give it? A 7.5? I think I got I think I got to lower it a half. I think I'm going to change to a 7. I don't.
Oh, no.
Yeah. No, I thought about it after I gave it a 7.5. I thought, 7.5 is too high. 7.
I agree with her about the editing. I usually don't notice that stuff unless it's like really obvious, like deer obvious. I like let stuff go, but this episode was just really bad. You know, there's the point where Michonne starts off driving that car, then we leave for a second and Rosita is suddenly driving and don't know why, like they didn't stop. There's a point where Carl's in the woods, but he's wearing different clothes than he was when we see him earlier in the episode. So I'm not sure. And I heard this from Kia on Two Dead Chicks, because you know, Carl's wearing two different shirts or two different outfits. Something is different about his outfit, and I'm not sure if that means that, you know, time has passed or whether it's just a mistake and, you know, they just you know, it was just an editing mistake and they just gave Carl a different shirt. And, but the driving is the part that just really got me. Like, Michonne is driving and then suddenly Rosita's driving and they never address it. It's not, like, did they stop somewhere? Why would they stop somewhere? And why would Rosita suddenly be driving? Oh.
You know, I just had a thought. I wonder if maybe this episode was affected somehow by the death on the set. I mean, I thought that took place with, what's his name, Dwight? I thought I heard the Dwight character was involved. So maybe it was last episode, but maybe somehow this episode got affected by it. I don't know. Or just everything that happened sort of threw everything off. And I hope that's not a sign for episodes to come, because, yeah, that wouldn't be good. It was just a thought I had just as you were talking about it. All right. Let's move on.
PBN Zane says, just watched, and this was some great episode about my Naked Ricks rating. Yeah, I do have a one track mind when it comes to the men on the show. LOL.
I seem to remember Judy, who's PBN Zane. I seem to remember her loving the Naked Daryl episode. So, I think there is a pattern. Anyway, moving on.
Sorry, Faith McQuinn. Okay, I'm sorry, but I'm commenting as I watch. Love the letter system. Great way to open the show. Oh, Carol, she still holds that fear of new children meeting the same fate as her daughter. But it was nice to see her willing to train Henry. Is it possible for me to grow up to be both Rosita and Michonne? I am the same age as Denai, but still, I haven't had a straight up LOL moment in a while. But Daryl running over the truck, and she's got some emojis here that are about laughing and crying. And you have to act like everything is normal until it is. That line is both depressing and hopeful. It basically encompasses the tone of this season. Good episode with solid character development, yet no real forward momentum. And I agree. I think this was just a setup episode that was just getting us everything in line for the next two episodes. I think as much as Rick being in the storage container and Daryl and Tara, whatever they're planning to do and whatever Aaron and Enid are planning to do, you know, everything is being set up for the next couple of episodes.
All right. And our last bit of feedback comes from Laura. There's not much here because she gave most of it in her awesome sauce and weak sauce, but kind of explaining her rating. She says, after seeing the Junkyard Kids and the cold open, I was sure this episode would earn below a 5, but it managed to eke out a 7.75. Yeah. Well, all right. So we've got our additional discussion points, things that haven't been mentioned. Reese, why don't you start?
Oh, so I haven't seen anybody talking about it, but I thought that Carl may have gotten bitten. After he gets up, he has blood all over him, and he's acting really weird. I don't know. Something about it just made me think, are they trying to fake us out? Is Carl, like, bitten, and is he just trying to hide it? I could be crazy, but, you know.
I don't think you're crazy. I noticed that first of all, he had a ton of blood on him, especially on his back. Now, mind you, he may have, like, ended up in the animal that was being eaten. I don't know, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I saw upon rewatching it the last time. Is that he actually fell back onto that thing that they were eating. And so that's why he had so much blood all over his back. And the one walker, so he's got two walkers on top of him, and he either hits one with the gun and then shoots the other, or he shoots them both with the gun. I ran that back 3 or 4 times and could not figure out how he killed that first walker unless he shot him and we just didn't hear the shot because it was muffled by the walker's head.
Could have been a bad editing thing again. Because it almost seemed like he killed him by headbutting him with the gun.
That's what I thought the first time I watched it, and then I watched it again. It's not clear exactly how it happens.
Well, I think there's more evidence to the bad editing idea. It did make me think that maybe he did get bitten. And reason why I thought of this sort of after the fact was I kept going back to Crying Rick from the season premiere.
Yeah.
And we assume that has happened some point in the near future. What if he dies? I mean, for one thing, it would be spoiler kind of the comic. Carl is very much alive in the comic book. So if they were to kill off Carl, that would be completely unexpected. I would have to think it's happening because Chandler Riggs wants to get off the show. I can't really see them doing that elsewise, but that would certainly affect Rick in a very deep and dark way, you know. So, but then again, looking at who's in that garbage truck, we have Daryl, Michonne, Rosita, and Tara. And certainly if Daryl or Michonne were the ones that got killed, that would also affect him. But then the question is, who the heck is watching Judith?
Yeah.
Some no-name lady that we saw in the first episode when Rick was walking away when he kissed her on the forehead. There's a lady sitting behind him. So, you know, she's... Judith's babysitters never fare well, so
yeah,
dead soon.
That's very observant of you. I do remember now that you said that there was a nondescript character we've probably never seen before watching her. And yeah, that totally puts a target on her head because, you know, essentially after we see who's left, who the heck is left in Alexandria at this point? Tobin and Scott are the ones I can think of that were probably involved that are now back in Alexandria.
Yeah, those are the only people that have names. There are a lot of red shirts.
Yes.
Yeah.
And red shirts, by definition, you know, at least Star Trek. Although right now they would be blue and copper shirts in the new show. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, go listen to the Star Trek Discovery podcast on the GSM network. And you might hear a host that sounds very familiar to you. Anyway, yeah, it does kind of put a target on their head. Because, I mean, maybe there are some other scavengers out there scavenging for the saviors that are, you know, not encumbered by the at one of the places, and or maybe they got away, you know, who knows? And they could attack Alexandria and we'd have a dead Judith. I don't like to think about that, but somebody's gonna die big, I think. And it's a short list of who could affect Rick that deeply. So who's next? Is it me or is it you, Steve?
I think it's me. I just had a couple of quick things that I didn't hear anybody mention, and that's that now we know why we were getting all the Polaroids so that he could go around to the Heapsters and maybe other, and also they could share with the other communities what's happening at the other locations. Jadis, at the beginning, I know we've talked at length about the whole art sculpting, but she appears to be sculpting a leaping tiger. If you look closely at what she's sculpting.
Yeah.
And it's looks very close to that image from the finale last season of Shiva jumping. And I thought that was kind of interesting. And none of us brought up the Sadiq character. As far as I'm concerned, the jury's still out on him. I don't know. How did he survive this long in that area without encountering one of these groups at some point. And, you know, where is his mother? He said his mother apparently was alive during the apocalypse, but then died sometime after. He says, when he says he killed the person, he says he. So that was obviously not his mother that he's talking about. So where are these other people at that he's, or did he lose everyone? It just, that it's a weird, I don't know if he's going to be a long-term character or if they're just setting up something. I don't know.
That's good points. I didn't mention it. I was going to mention it here that I did like the interaction between Carl and Sadiq. I like the character of Sadiq, and I think it's kind of cool that Carl, I mean, this is one example, probably the only one I can think of, where one of the characters is going against the plan, but I kind of like that he did, because I think Sadiq seems to be a decent guy and a trustworthy guy. I would agree the jury's still out, but I think on the whole, I feel like I can trust him. What about you, Reese? What do you think about Sadiq?
I mean, he's fine. I was just so frustrated by the fact that Carl was out there. I didn't care about him. So maybe if I watch it again, he'll make more of an impact. But I mean, he seems okay. And he obviously made a bigger impact on Rick, because in that the part of the flash, I guess we're calling it a flash forward, where Rick is crying, he's repeating what Sadiq said to Carl in the first episode, something about
my mercy prevails over my wrath.
Yeah, that's what Rick is saying, and that's what Sadiq said to Carl in the first episode.
Yeah,
about and it's something his mother said. So,
and I thought that was good, and to me, that was kind of an indication that Sadiq may be here for the long haul. I don't know much about his character, but I do believe he is a character from the comic book. So.
Yeah, I heard that too.
Yeah, I mentioned the family letter thing earlier. So I thought it was cool, and I know I think Faith mentioned that she thought it was cool. Okay, well, how are they doing that? And they can't actually be like reading all the notes at the same time, because how much time had passed? And for that matter, Rick, since he's walking, he must have been the last to read the letters, right? I mean, they can't really work out any other way.
Who took the letter back? Who took Rick's letter back?
I don't, maybe Rick wrote the letter and gave it to Aaron.
Aaron went to the hilltop.
Yeah.
Yeah, Aaron brought the letter to the hilltop. Somebody brought the letter to Carol at the kingdom, and that was just a nobody. I don't think we knew who that was.
I have an idea who that could have been.
And then Alexandria, who delivered the letters to Alexandria? It showed it.
Was it Tara? I don't know. It's a good point, though, and I don't remember. I'm thinking that who would have brought Maggie's note from the hilltop would have been Diane, who was with the rest of the hilltop people and Morgan. I could see Diane, you know, the one that has the bow and arrow.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't she still at the hilltop, though? She was at the hilltop in this episode.
Was she?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't recall, but I'll accept that.
I believe she was at the hilltop. She closed the gate when, I believe that's Diane. She closed the gate when Maggie had the prisoners moved.
Okay. I'll accept that answer.
Now, maybe I'm mixing Diane up with another woman, but I believe that's Diane. I believe the woman I saw was Diane, so.
And I was just doing some math. So I'll accept the fact that it was Diane. And if it wasn't Diane, I don't know who it could have been, unless there were, you know, some nondescript, knight of the kingdom that was working with them and went back. I don't know. 'Cause obviously once they found out that, stuff happened in the way that it did over with the kingdom's, people, they probably would have wanted any and all kingdom people to come home.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah. She's a fighter that's still alive.
One of the few.
Yeah. They do need a better form of communication, Rick and the rest of his crew. I mean, we see the Saviors with walkie-talkie sometimes. I don't know why they haven't found walkie-talkies or something. This letter system is not very good. They need to be, for this war, they need to be in constant communication. So I don't know why they haven't picked up some walkie-talkies along the way.
Well, it's only been a day and a half.
Well, during the time when they were, putting all the metal on the cars, they could have gone on a run to get walkie-talkies or something.
Well, and you know, it always seems like they have walkie-talkies and then they don't.
Yeah, Rick and Michonne had walkie-talkies last season.
Yeah, they had them at Alexandria when they were doing that thing where they were going to move the zombie horde, right? Weren't they using radios during that little thing?
I don't remember that, but I know Rick and Michonne specifically had walkie-talkies. Rick had one when he went with Aaron on that when they went to the boat, and Michonne had the other one when she went on her walk.
You know, that's always been a thing that has bugged me because, you know, this is supposed to be Alexandria and this is supposed to be Virginia, and there were supposedly people that lived in Virginia and surrounding DC, a lot of them. So I tend to think that there would be stores like, oh, I don't know, Army Surplus Stores, Dick's Sporting Goods, Walmart, you know, and I have to think that there's probably still a lot of walkie-talkies on the shelf, you know, so that kind of stuff drives me nuts because that always has bugged me. So I'm glad that you brought this up, Reese, because I don't get it. Like, it's not like they're in, you know, BF Egypt, you know, or whatever, you know. And if you don't know what BF means, go look it up. It's not like they're in some remote area where there's not a lot of stores. There's got to be like big box stores, hunting places to get guns up the wazoo. I mean, cripe, this is DC, the Pentagon. Hello. Of course, there's probably people still at the Pentagon for that matter, which, by the way, is next door. Is that the next city over? Isn't that in Arlington, Virginia?
Yeah. That's what I was going to say is wasn't that the whole point of why they went that direction, was because they assumed that if there was going to be any infrastructure still left, that it would be there, you know, and they haven't said anything about looking at the Pentagon, going to DC, going actually to DC. They've talked about how they're just a little ways away from DC, but we've never actually seen them go there.
That's a good point.
Yeah, they didn't go because that was Eugene's lie. They found out Eugene was lying, they just sort of...
And everybody just kind of dropped it.
Yeah, everybody just said, forget it. DC, Eugene lied, so DC is out.
Okay, well, anyway, that's more of a structural thing with the show. I tend to think of it of, like, this is an alternate universe, DC.
Yeah.
DC of this universe has, you know, only, I don't know, 500,000 people or something like that.
Try to explain that, though.
Anyway.
They tried to give you an explanation. I mean, you might not buy it, but.
Yeah. Or the city's been, you know, infested. But, I mean, that's just DC. That's why they're called the Beltway. I mean, there's all sorts of different towns in and around DC in both Virginia and Maryland. So anyway, my point being is there's stuff all over the place. Walkie talkies. I'm sorry. I can't see that the Saviors have monopolized and gotten every single walkie talkie in the DC area. It's crazy. Okay. So I had a horrible thought on one of my final watches this morning. So he shows the trash people the pictures of the sanctuary, and we see that they have rejected the deal. Doesn't that kind of put the trash people in a position to get rid of all the walkers? Couldn't, and you know, yes, we mentioned that there are snipers, you know, in the area, but if there are like over 60 of them, they could easily overcome those snipers. And if they have a helicopter, for example, not that they do, but if that came into play, either solution could totally get rid of all the walkers. They wouldn't need the fat lady. They could just shoot about. So,
well, I kind of got the impression from this episode that the alliance between Negan and the trash people was just a temporary thing. And it was just for that battle. And now the trash people are just kind of keeping to themselves. And they're kind of not taking any side at this point. That was kind of the impression I got until we see the end when we see Rick in the storage container. We don't know why they're holding him. Are they holding him supposedly waiting for Negan? Again, it's only been a day and a half, a couple of days. So they may not even know what's actually going on at the sanctuary or have had any contact with the sanctuary.
Yeah.
And so the trash people really don't have any reason to go try to rescue the saviors.
Yeah, unless they want to, they think they can get a better deal from them, which I would tend to think if they were to rescue them, they would. So, I don't know. But the whole thing could horribly backfire, I think, at this point. Do you have anything else, Reese?
No, that was it. Carl's going to die. I said it first.
Do you have anything else, Steve?
Not really.
All right. Well, a couple of quick things. Threats and dreams, dreams and threats. Not exactly efficient speaking there. And why are Brion and Tamiel the only ones without mullets than the trash people?
Is that canon? His name Brion? I thought it was Brian. They just spelled it stupid.
No, it's Brion.
Okay.
And I've often thought of that Brion and Tamiel was like, you know, Brian Owens or something like that. So it got shortened to Brion. And Tamiel must have been, you know, Tammy Lindsay or something, you know, some last name. So it got shortened. And, you know, Jadis was probably, I don't know, what would that be? Jade Samson or something. Jade Smith. And that became Jadis. Okay. So anyone else wish that Carol and Ezekiel would have kissed in that last scene with them?
Yeah. I like them together.
I kind of do too.
Yeah, I felt if the roles had been reversed, if, you know, you had a female who was sulking and the male coming to console her, I think that would be kind of the move. But because it was reversed to the other way around, to where it was a female coming to try to console a male, I think they just didn't have her be that kind of bold.
Yeah.
Just my thought.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And, you know, maybe it'll lead to that, but I still kind of want to see it.
Even at his lowest, Ezekiel is really dramatic. Like, he got dressed and went to the theater just so he could sit there and have Jerry stand outside.
I thought that.
And sulk all day.
Yeah, I kind of thought that too. And, you know, maybe he sat there because that's where he sat with Shiva. So he was kind of, you know, stuck in that moment. But yeah, it is kind of weird. You'd think he'd just like go to his room or something. Another thing, Gregory and Jared in the same pen, that just reeks of coup attempt and total mistake.
Yeah, that's why I can't give Maggie like full points this episode, because why is Gregory there? She could have just sent him on his way. She doesn't. I mean, if she doesn't want to kill him, just make him leave. Like, nothing good comes of having him there. And Jared is just, he should have been dead episodes ago. Should have been dead. What was that? Episode 3 or 4 where he is antagonizing Morgan.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was episode 3. Well, you know, Jesus likes to antagonize. because Jesus wants to save poor POWs. Enough of that. Okay. One thing I'm glad I saw this because I almost passed it by. The A on the shipping container that she writes, obviously an homage to past A's, but what's the significance of A in this damn show?
I don't know. They keep coming back to it. You know, I don't know what it, did we ever find out what it means when they're in Terminus, or is it just, it's never explained. They were in Boxcar A.
Yeah, they were in Boxcar A, and then the termites.
They put the A on the church.
They put the A on the church, and then they get to Alexandria, and what's his name? Sam has the stamp with the A. But I this
oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, and then of course Daryl gets an A when he's wearing that like burlap shirt in, you know, while being captive. So I don't get it. That seems to be a Gimple thing because they never did that before. I don't think that ever showed up, you know, in the first three seasons before he was showrunner. So I don't really get it. Maybe
they never explain it. They never have any explanation for why they're identifying. It's really weird that multiple groups have this sort of identification system.
Well, and you know, there was the episode A, as well, which was, you know, the Boxcar A, but, you know, maybe Gimple's wife, is named Allison or Alice or, you know, a mother or something. Maybe it has some significance to him. Maybe it's like the number 47 in Star Trek, you know?
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. That's the exact comment I was going to make is that it's just one of those things that the showrunners kind of throw in just as a kind of an Easter egg to the fans.
Well, I know that, that A on that Daryl had on his burlap sack, the what was it, last season?
Yeah.
There were tons of theories out there about that when we first saw that, and nothing came of it. It's just A and nothing else, and we moved on to this A.
Yeah. Okay. So, do you think Alden could convert? Do you think he's the one savior that could be converted over to be a good guy? Alden's the guy that knocked the rock out of goof face Jared's hands and, you know, was talking to Jesus, said he wasn't an angel, but I don't think that means he's a bad guy. He just has done things, and I think everyone at that point had done some things. So what do you think, Alden? Do you think he's got a chance to become a good guy?
I don't know. I got a real Eddie Haskell vibe from the way he was talking, and even the way Jesus reacted to him when he was running down his story to Jesus, and he was like, "Oh, I came across this community that had these tough guys in it, and I'm not really a tough guy, but I went ahead and went along with them, and I was just there to build a fence." And then Jesus just tells him basically to shut up. I don't know. I don't trust any of those saviors, because there's no way to know who was just a worker and who was more than just a worker.
Where do you think Daryl and Tara and now Rosita and Michonne are going? What are they doing to seal the deal, so to speak? Any thoughts?
I don't know where they're going. They weren't meeting up with Michonne and Rosita, so I don't know where they were going, where Tara and Daryl were going to begin with. I don't know what his plan is. They don't have any explosives now, I don't think. So were they just going to, was he just going to ram that truck into the Savior's fence like he said he was going to do, just to let the walkers into the building now?
Yeah, and, you know, he said that they have much more work to do, so what does that mean? I don't know. I mean, yeah, that's a thought, is that, you know, he could make it impossible for the saviors to get out. I don't know, but I have to think a place that big, it'd be difficult to completely block all entrances. And anyone that's outside could get out. So, you know, maybe he's going to nuke the trash people. And to that, I say... One can hope. I don't have any idea, but I am kind of curious where that's going. I hope the idea of Enid being a spy is going to go away. Really? And I got to say, one of the podcasts that I listened to over the Thanksgiving holiday mentioned yet again, fresh, that Enid is the mole. And I'm like, oh my God, are you kidding me?
A mole for who now?
The saviors. Yeah.
Really?
It's insane. There has been no evidence. The only thing you can say about Enid is she's a weird little kid. Okay. She's a,
but not anymore.
No, she's not. And she was just a weird kid when they first got to Alexandria. And I think, you know, I don't get it.
She wasn't any weirder than Rick was when he got to Alexandria. I mean, the only thing she was doing was running in and out. Rick was outside burying guns and threatening to, you know, cut people's throats to take over the town. So, like,
yeah.
I mean, I don't understand why. And this is like a really long con for the saviors to be pulling when they can just come in and kill them. They already know where Alexandria is. There's nothing. Why would she let them get attacked like this if she's a spy for the saviors?
It makes no sense.
Like, unless you think Negan is just really like into the joke, like, I'm going to let them completely destroy my compound and then I'm going to run in at the last minute. Ha ha, the joke's on you.
Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
Thank you, Negan. Thank God for you. Oh, my God. Okay, so getting to the point that I wanted to make. Okay, so Enid and Aaron. Now, Aaron's leaving, and he's, you know, when she asks him, he says, to make sure we win. So wherever he's going, he says, to make sure we win. Now, okay. I could see him going after Eric to kill Eric, but that wouldn't make sure that they win. Okay. And then, you know, Enid comes back and says, you're right. We need a win, which is a more general thing. So what's Aaron going to do to make sure that they win?
I thought I couldn't figure this out either. I didn't notice it on the first watches. It wasn't until I saw your feedback that I went back and watched it again and saw that exchange between him and Enid. And you think, because he's talking all about Eric and how he misses him and all this, and you think, okay, that's, he's going to go try to find Eric. But then he makes this comment about to make sure we win. And it doesn't make any sense to me, because I don't think you said something. I think one in your feedback, in your notes, it talks about that he could be going to Oceanside. But they've already taken all the guns from Oceanside. So what's there besides women? How's that?
I mean, some of them are fighters. So
yeah.
Maybe he wants to pick them up. But that, like, I don't know what is part of the plan and what's not now. I mean, I know Daryl, Tara, Rosita, Michonne, those people aren't following the plan. But is Aaron, like, meant to be following the plan? Is, like, you know, is this something he's supposed to be doing or not? I don't know. I wish I knew what this plan was now. So,
yeah,
because I thought I was clear about what the plan was, but now I'm not sure. Like, I don't know what they're doing now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I have to give credit to Megan Dively Lehman. I hope I said your name right. Who's on the Zedheads Unite Facebook group that we belong to. And again, that's part of the Walking Dead Casks Patreon group. So anyway, she came up with that theory, so I've got to give her credit to it. And yeah, they did take all of their guns, but they are fighters and they need people right now, especially after losing all the Kingdom Warriors. So I think going to the ocean side would make sense. I don't know what else he could do to make sure that they win, unless he knows of, I don't know, some group that he's never mentioned, another Deus Ex Machina, like from his, his, you know, travels as a recruiter. You know, that could be, but that would kind of be really, really pulling a rabbit out of a hat. So I don't know. I want to wrap things up, but I will ask, so especially you, Reese, you had mentioned that you have had a lot to say about this season. So you want to take a stab at it?
I haven't enjoyed the season. I'm not a Negan fan. I'm not a fan of what I think they're trying to do, which is redeem his character. They've done too much for the saviors for him to be redeemed in my eyes right now. And I'm not enjoying it. He hasn't been on a lot this season, but they haven't really gotten the balance with him right. So he's not funny enough for me to want him around, and he's not scary enough for me to understand why nobody's killing him. So he's just sort of there, and I like Jeffrey Dean Morgan, and sometimes it's right and he's clicking with me, and other times I don't understand. And I'm having a real big problem with the timeline. I like the war that's going on, but then we find out in the sixth episode that it has only been a day and a half. And time is just not moving on this show, and I don't understand. I really don't. Like, Judith is aging, Carl is aging, but time's not moving. I can't. I'm starting to get really, like, down about the show, and I don't want to do that. I want to enjoy it, but I'm not seeing enough of the people I like Carl, and Michonne are back, but they've only been in two episodes this season, and I don't know. I'm not feeling this season of the show, and I was excited at the beginning of the season. I did not like last season at all. So I was excited to get back. I thought All Out War was going to be fun, and not so much for me. So
do you like it more than last season?
Oh, I mean, anything was better than last season. So yes, that's not a high bar to cross. Oh, last season. Oh my God.
Yeah. Steve, any final thoughts?
Just, I've kind of got the same thing. The timeline is what is really throwing me off on this season so far, and whether we're going to see this war end, or is it going to go on? Are they just teasing us about this whole time jump thing? And so I'm ready for the next two episodes to be done so I can go back and rewatch all of them in one block, and maybe I'll understand it better.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, anyway, if you want to hear about what I think about this season, you can keep listening to the podcast. But I want to wrap things up. So to submit your feedback, there are many ways to do so. Go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, where you can submit text or audio. And on that page and on the website is a SpeakPipe widget. I know that's how Tilly submitted her voicemail, so that is a thing you could use. You can also call the GSM voicemail line, which is at 304-837-2278. But most people give us our feedback through the Facebook group. That's at facebook.com/groups/walkingdeadGSM. And if you aren't a member, Enid says,
"Are you serious?"
I had to use Enid, especially since the fact that she's the spy.
It's a trap!
Anyway, I don't think it's a trap, but I think somebody's trying to create a trap. There's also our email address, which is walkingdeadgsm@gmail.com. Most weeks, the deadline for submitting feedback is 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central. on Tuesday. However, we are recording early next week because Tuesday is my anniversary. So we'll be recording Monday. So the feedback deadline for next week is Monday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central. So there's also our Twitter, which is at WalkingDeadGSM. To support us, best way at least to give us some Apple Podcast momentum is to subscribe to us on there. But if you don't use Apple Podcasts, subscribe to us on whatever podcast client that you use. You can help us out by leaving a rating or review. And we've gotten several ratings over the last week or so. I guess finally people started listening to me complain about not getting ratings. So one was a 4-star from Argoody, and that person was the person that complained about me saying F you. And that person also said some not so flattering things about me. So thank you, Argoody. I'm sure that you're not listening to us anymore based on your review, but have a nice life. But we did get a fantastic 5-star review from Malika's mom, who, you know, was one of the guest hosts the other week. Malika's mom, Kathy, and I know she is a member of the Facebook group. Kathy, that was a kick-ass review you gave us, so thank you so much. Other ways to support us, one thing is the, I'll mention it now because it is that time of year. There is the Amazon affiliate, which is THEFR08-20. If you look at the blog post for each episode, you'll see a mention of this. There's an Amazon affiliate little Chrome extension that I use that whenever I go to Amazon in my Chrome browser, it automatically applies the Amazon affiliate. So go to that link, and that would help out not just this podcast, but the entire network, help keep the lights on and whatnot. And there are other ways to support the network at goldenspiralmedia.com/support. The next episode is season 8, episode 7, which is titled Time for After, and reminds me of the episode after the governor attacks the prison. That was called After. So maybe it's time for that. I don't know. It is written and directed by the very prolific TBD, to be determined. The description is Negan has to enlist the help of his lieutenants in solving a huge issue facing the sanctuary. Rick and the group continue to enact the plan. I have to ask about that because Rick is in a shipping container right now. How is he going to enact the plan unless this is part of the plan? Although I will say this past week's description wasn't very descriptive of what actually happened. This could also be not very descriptive. Scheduled to appear as guest hosts next week, and I think it's find it quite a treat from the Strange Indeed podcast is Rima Joe, and from the Game of Microphones podcast, both of them are on the Podcastica network, is Kristen Hall. It's going to be an interesting episode. I guarantee you that. So, I would like to, both remind you that, later this week, you will get an episode where we discuss in detail the crossover. So look for that in the feed. That'll probably come out Friday or Saturday. But before we go, I just want to thank, you, Reese, for coming back. I'll just say. I have used that multiple times this week. So, and to you, Steve, since I don't want to use that again, I will use this. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you so much, guys, for coming on this show and not just doing one, but you did 2 episodes. So to that, I both have to give you this showcase award. So thank you for this marathon session of recording The Walking Dead Talk Through and Fear The Walking Dead Talk Through.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure. And, you know, hopefully we'll have you both come back at some point. So with that, I'm Brian.
I'm Reese.
And I'm Steve.
And this is The Walking Dead Talk Through. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Good night.